I grew up in California in a small town and then moved to Los Angeles and spent most of my life in Los Angeles before I moved here 20 years ago.
The construction. So there's construction all over the city. There's always cones everywhere. Is there anything that we can do about that? A lot of people are asking about the Mormon church that's getting built by Lone Mountain. We know that that's not your district, but can you offer any clarification sort of on what that situation is? What's good, guys? Your boy Brandon back again, another episode of the On the Run podcast. This week, we have a very special guest, especially for all our wonderful Las Vegas viewers. We have Councilwoman Victoria Seaman, who's also running for mayor in these upcoming November elections. Councilwoman, how are you?
I'm good. So grateful to be here.
Likewise. Thank you so much for your time. I can imagine it's very busy, given that you have to perform your job as well as campaigning and, you know, do all the shaking hands and kissing babies and the whole ordeal.
We wanted to make sure we were on your podcast.
I appreciate
the name, On the Run.
I appreciate that. So one thing about our podcast is obviously the people that we bring on are familiar faces. Everybody kind of knows who they are, what they're about, but we like telling the stories behind the people. So I'd like to sort of break down your story for our audience so they can get to know you a little bit better on a personal basis. So tell us a little bit about sort of where you're from, how you grew up, and how you got your start in politics.
So I grew up in California in a small town in Central California and then moved to Los Angeles and spent most of my life in Los Angeles before I moved here 20 years ago. And I was a businesswoman who brought a business to Nevada because I was tired of the policies of California in the regulations and taxes in running a business. So we thought that this was a much more business-friendly state. So I brought a bath and body product line that I created and manufactured to Las Vegas 20 years ago. And after 5 years, I was starting to see the same thing happen policy-wise in Las Vegas. And I decided, after just voting, never being involved with politics, that I was going to get involved and make sure that small business owners had enough representation. Little did I know that I would be sitting here in your podcast studio running for mayor after spending 2 years in the state legislature and 5 years in the city council. That wasn't the plan. I always say God has a funny sense of humor. He took a businesswoman and brought me into politics.
Absolutely. How long ago was it that you moved from California to Las Vegas?
20 years ago.
20 years ago. Okay. So you have been here. I'm born and raised here. I'm 25. So,
wow.
You know,
so you've been here 5 years longer than
me. 5 years longer than you. But, you know, growing up here, it's a very interesting place because the city's known globally. But living here doesn't feel like we had the same opportunities as other big cities like LA, New York,
right,
Chicago, Miami. But, you know, within the last like 5 years, we've been seeing the city just boom. There's a big transformation. There's people starting businesses. Big businesses are coming to Las Vegas. We had things like the Super Bowl, F1. We have a basketball WNBA team. The Golden Knights just won the Stanley Cup last year. So it just feels like the city is at an all-time high.
Did you imagine that when
Absolutely
you were growing
not.
Up?
Absolutely
that
not.
That we would have all these sports team, the Raiders, a stadium, and NBA coming soon.
Hopefully. But definitely not. It was something that I was always a little bit jealous in that regard because I would say, man, I'm so happy and proud to be from Las Vegas, but we don't have the cool things that other cities have. But thankfully, that's starting to change. So if you were to be elected to mayor, what are some of the things that you would do to sort of keep us on that track to keep getting better?
Well, I think the important thing is to make sure that everybody has equal opportunity with education. I think that's really, really important. And you probably don't know, but in the city of Las Vegas, we started our own charter school in an underserved area that's booming. It's bilingual. I would really make sure that since AB 400, which is an assembly bill that allowed us to support charter schools, I would make sure that we're doing more in the underserved neighborhoods. I think we're failing in education, and we don't need to be failing in education. So that's top of the mind for me. Also, there's a lot of folks that really want to bring their vision to fruition with small business. I want to make it easier so that everybody has the affordability to be able to say, I have a dream, I want to start a business, and it's affordable. So working with those folks, we do a lot of great programs of workforce at the city. We're working on affordable housing and so many other things. We're also, if you probably don't know this, bringing an art museum to Las Vegas. Can you imagine? You say you grew up here and, you know, you can't imagine all these things. Now we're going to have probably a world-class art museum here.
Right.
So there's so many things that I will continue to work on. I've had 5 years at the city to sort of push all these things, and I'm going to continue to do that.
Absolutely. With education in particular, one thing that I see being a product of the Clark County School District is that there isn't a very big emphasis on sort of like trades or sort of pushing our students to sort of go to higher education, especially in STEM fields. I feel like a lot of it really is just the city depends on so many service jobs that they sort of encourage people to sort of, you know, you graduate high school and it's like you're going to go get a valet job or you're going to be a bartender or you're going to go into these fields, which nothing wrong with that. Absolutely. And those are the people that really make our city run. But what are the things that we can do as a city and that you can do as our mayor that would sort of encourage students to pursue education, especially given now that big companies are looking to move towards Las Vegas and they're going to need skilled labor?
Yeah, they need skilled labor. And I don't think college is for everyone, but I do believe we need more trade schools.
Absolutely.
Because like you just said, skilled labor, it is so important because for those that want to go to college, you know, we need to make sure that there's scholarships and opportunity for everyone. But for those that don't want to go to college, they need to be trained in the field that they want. I would really love to see Las Vegas a place where you're doing the job because you like the job, not because you have to make a living. And there are so many opportunities today in Las Vegas, as you said, over the last 20 years, that are here now that people can pursue their dream rather than just have a job. I think just having a job is when you're in high school or when you're really trying to figure out what you want to do. After that, I think we need to continue the workforce programs, which we do at the city, which we have a lot of state programs that we also, and federal that we partnership with, and we need to continue that. I think the most important thing is getting the word out. We have to do a better PR because a lot of folks, even you, did not know that we have a lot of skilled trade programs, but we need to get the word out so people know.
Absolutely. Yeah, I just feel like it's not talked about enough. I remember being in high school and those options don't really seem super clear to you. We sort of just grow up to do what we see everybody else doing instead of looking for those other avenues to say, okay, maybe college isn't for me, but I can go into HVAC. I can go into some kind of skilled trade and make a good living for myself and provide for my family.
Exactly, because a lot of people don't want to go to college. And there's a lot of unemployed people right now that went to college.
Absolutely.
Because they don't have skilled labor.
Absolutely.
And those are the jobs that we need. So I agree with you. I think we need to do more PR on it. I think we need to encourage people to get those jobs that they want to do. Like they always say, you know, if you love what you do, you've never worked a day in your life, right?
Absolutely.
And that's what we absolutely have to do.
Yeah. And to follow up on the like sort of the museum, those types of things are the things that give Las Vegas like culture. I feel like that was the one thing
that was missing.
Is we are a relatively young city, but for the most part, it was made up of tourists. So people would come here and then they would leave. And it's beautiful in a way because we're a city where, you know, if you walk outside, you could see people from all over the world, all over the country, you know, all these languages and cultures, but we were missing our own. And it feels like we're finally finding that groove. So thank you for doing things like bringing a museum and those kinds of things are not really spoken about enough. And people sort of seem to overlook them sometimes, but they really do make a difference. Like imagine all the people that travel to New York, to Paris, and they go to these big art museums. They're historical. I have a dream that one day Las Vegas is going to be a city like that, where you don't just come here to gamble, but you come here to enjoy the city and its culture.
Yes, because there's so many other things like Red Rock. We have a great place to go hiking for people who love the outdoors. And I think with the Graham Park that we're building in Summerlin is going to be an excellent place. And one of my goals as the mayor is to make sure that we go to all of our parks and improve them as much as possible. People want to go outside and enjoy the outdoors. Maybe not in the summer,
In the summer,
it's been a very hot summer.
Super hot.
One of the things that I noticed when I was elected to Ward 2 was that our parks, even in Ward 2, were neglected. And so the first thing I did was start going out to the parks and making sure that we made it a playground that children wanted to play in. I mean, the playground that worked maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago doesn't work anymore for children. They're much more advanced with computer and technology. And so I think improving our way of life in every aspect is my goal. And I think we can be the crown jewel of the West. We're not just a world-class city. We can be the crown jewel of the West.
I hope so. I hope so. Especially given, like, seeing what's happened in Los Angeles and California in general, San Francisco. It's a tragedy because those were the cities that one day that everybody grew up wanting to go to. You being from California yourself probably remember when everybody was moving, there was the boom.
Now we're running away from there.
And now everybody's running away just because of what they what
because
it's turned
into. Because of the policies. See, policies can either destroy a city or it can make it so desirable and a great place to live. And that's why for me coming from Los Angeles and seeing it start to deteriorate with policies 20 years ago, I came to the city. I love the city. This city's given me a lot. And I want to make sure that we continue to enhance those and those policies that make this place a great place to live for every single person. And that's why education is really top of my mind, even though people would say that, well, that's not your purview. It is now because of AB 400 and because when COVID hit, we were the one place where children could go and be tutored or taken care of while their parents were at work if they were still working, because all the schools shut down, but we still managed to take those kids at the city. And we used our some of our ARPA money from COVID, from the federal government, to create a charter school. And so now I believe it is our purview. And I will do everything to make sure that we continue to support charter schools that will show that we can have better education in this state.
Absolutely. And given that you were a previous business owner, people like me, and I don't mean to just single myself out, but I'm someone that was born and raised here. I'm a product of this Clark County School District. I graduated from UNLV proudly. So I'm Las Vegas through.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And now I'm a business owner, right? I have a platform here, which I hope to transform and help provide, give back value to the city. What kind of policies do you see yourself putting in place to make it easier for people that want to have a business, in particular people that are from the city, that would make it balanced? Because I see a lot of big companies moving here, which is great, right? It's always going to stimulate the economy and give people jobs. But what kind of things can we do to make sure that the people here are also taken care of and have a way, a pathway to being able to own a business?
Well, I think for one is the licensing and people. The biggest complaint I get from people, because we do the ordinance part of it. We do the business licensing in the city. County is separate. And I think in all of Southern Nevada, the city is known to be the easiest, but we can do better. People shouldn't have to wait on a business license. People shouldn't have to wait when they're doing construction on a building to do their business. People shouldn't wait for a fire inspection. The longer it takes for people to get their paperwork in order, they're already paying out on their rental or what have you. Those are the things that I can change. I can also work with my legislative colleagues, because I've been there, and make sure that I'm advocating for policies that are going to make it easy for businesses. As government, we can either stifle businesses or we can encourage them and help them. And here's the funniest thing. Why would we stifle them when, as soon as they're in business, we get the revenue to do the necessary services for the community? So I've never understood that as a businesswoman about government. And that's why I think it's a good thing that I had the other experience walking into government, because I've been on the other side. I understand what stifles businesses from being able to do business. So here we are, and I think it's very important that we as legislators, we as council members, really go out to the community and say, what do you need from us?
Absolutely. I've personally, within the last week, actually, I've had a conversation with another business owner who the exact same thing has happened. They've had their new location ready to go. They've, you know, it's almost a year of renovations, and they still don't have their license to move there.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
And they just, you know, they tell me, they're like, yeah, we're paying rent there. We have a bunch of stuff that we can't store anywhere. Our customers are, you know, this is going to be a better place for our business. And they're just losing out on so much money and so much opportunity because of things like that taking forever.
Yes. And I've already done some investigation on why is it taking us so long, and understanding we work through an enterprise system. And so these are some of the things that I am working on to see if we can't do this all in-house instead of outside contractors, so that we can streamline it so people aren't waiting. And it's the same with contractors when they're building. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. They've taken out loans and now they're waiting on us. And sometimes we don't understand how painful that can be for a business if you haven't been there.
Absolutely. And in what ways would your position as mayor be different from your position as councilwoman? Like, can you explain? As I'm not very well versed in that, I'm sure a lot of people. Yeah.
That's an absolutely great question. So as a council member, I can't really step on the mayor's toes. Like, if I see something that really needs to be done, I could lead with it. And I do. But there are certain things that I can't at this time. But I have brought forth ordinances that maybe the council members nor the mayor didn't like, and went forth with them because that's what leaders do, and made sure they got passed. But as a leader, these will be my priorities at the chair of the council, is to say, these are my priorities. We're streamlining businesses to make it easier. I've done that as a councilwoman, and I've made a lot of great strides. One thing about me is that I'm a bold leader, and I've taken on all the issues at the city that no one wants to take on. If you've read anything about me, it was my leadership that we were able to find solutions for our animal problem of decades of an animal shelter that simply was mismanaged and didn't work. And I think as the leader, the chair, I can do a lot more.
Absolutely. Yeah, I did read a lot about that, and it's very commendable. I've seen the city sort of rally behind you a little bit, but it just took that one person to push it forward, because it often feels that way. There's a lot of problems and everybody sees it, but nobody's the person to, like, step up. But as soon as somebody does step up, we are a city where we have each other's backs, and
that's right,
we sort of get the mission accomplished.
That's right. And very proud of that work, because it's important that if you're in those positions, show leadership and step out and stop kicking the can down the road. And too often, that's what politicians do. That's why earlier today I made a joke with you and I said I'm not a politician.
Yeah.
I'm a public servant. I look at myself as a public servant because that's what we're called to do. We're called to represent the people. It isn't about my agenda. It's about what's important for the city, what's important for the residents, and our animals.
Absolutely. What are the things you're most excited about to see happen or coming to Vegas within the next few years?
Everything. I mean, I am really active in trying to bring businesses here that create good paying jobs. It's important. Manufacturing. We don't have a lot of manufacturing. I would like to see us get into manufacturing. I would love to continue working with the federal government and getting some of our land back. We are so landlocked, 87, 84. Every time I ask them, it's either between 84 and 87% of our land belongs to the federal government. And really, when it comes to 80s, it doesn't matter if it's 84. I say it's too much.
Yeah, too much.
And so what we need to do is continue working with that, because I would like to see us become big with manufacturing. I would like to see us diversify the economy in every single way that we possibly can.
Yeah, that was another big thing that I wanted to ask about, was diversifying the economy. It's gotten better within the last few years, but definitely not where, I guess, I'm sure you agree, where we would like to see it.
No, I'd like to see us be, you know, where we have almost every type of business here. And I think manufacturing is really limited now in most of the U.S. And I would like to see us do that. I think it would create a lot of good jobs and bring in some good businesses, and we have to start building up. So some of those buildings would could be great. I would love to see a clothing district here, like you see in New York and LA, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, let's take some of the, we already have the World Market Center where we have the furniture shows twice a year, mm-hmm. where we bring in these big conventions, and you can go to the World Market Center and look at all that new furniture. And I would like to see us have a clothing district. I would like to see us have a jewelry district. I think we're a growing city and we can do so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Even things like the arts district has been expanding very quickly exactly. within the last few years. Yeah, just seeing it boom, because I have a lot of friends that have businesses there, or we frequent there often because we like to shop there, to eat there. There's a lot of fun places to hang out there, and seeing things like that, you know, brings us back to the culture. But I love seeing those kinds of districts as well, because you go to New York and you see all these
everything.
They're historic, you know, they're historic, and there's a bunch of businesses that come out of there that become global, and there's a bunch of stories and just like all the memories. And that's such a cool thing that I would love to see come to Vegas.
Yes, I'm excited about it. Yes, I love New York and I love LA, but I would love to, you know, I don't want to live there. Yeah. I would love to see us have a lot of those different industries here where we don't have to say, well, I'm going to go to LA because I need to do this certain type of shopping. We'll have it right here.
Exactly. Yeah. Do everything in-house. I had a conversation with a fellow content creator. His name is Brandon from Vegas. I don't know if you're familiar with him. But yeah, we were talking about how Las Vegas is like the best city in the world. And we had a bunch of comments. The post went kind of viral, and everybody from other places were like, no, you're not. No, you're not. It's LA. It's New York. And all the Vegas people were like, you guys are crazy. No, you guys don't know what you're missing out.
They have nothing on us. And it was so funny because when I moved here 20 years ago, part of the reason for moving here was bringing a small business. That we have the best tax, no state tax,
no
right?
No state tax, yeah.
So it's absolutely ripe for business. And the main thing we needed was an international airport. And we're talking 20 years ago. We have an international airport. We have best entertainment, right? We didn't have the stadium then. We didn't have the nights then. But we did have so much even 20 years ago for someone who wanted to bring a business. Now look at what we offer. We offer so much more.
Yeah. I always tell people there's not a better time to be in Vegas. If you're moving out of Vegas now, like, you're crazy, especially if you endured like the last 20 years and now you're moving out. So you're quitting right before the finish line.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Another thing I wanted to ask you was the construction. So obviously if we drive around, there's construction all over the city. There's always cones everywhere. That seems to be a problem that a lot of people face. So is there anything that we can do about that?
Well, first of all, we have a lot of people moving here.
Yeah.
So we're growing, growing, growing. So these are the growing pains that we have to go through to make this our world-class city, right? And when we talk about the orange cones, I have a story.
Sure.
I am grateful for the orange cones.
Why is that?
Because in 2015, my husband and I were on Rampart getting onto the Summerlin Freeway, and they didn't cone a big open space that they constructed. They mm-hmm. opened up a lane about, I don't know, a foot deep and all the way as wide as the lane, and then about 12 feet long. And we went in and out of it at 45 miles an hour and almost died.
Oh my goodness.
So when people ask me about orange cones, we have to put up with the growing pains. And I know I've seen those cones there and nobody's working, but I'm grateful for them because we didn't have them and we had a horrible accident.
Yeah.
But we both survived.
Thankfully.
I was bedridden for about a month, maybe a little bit longer. But I can tell you this, we're a growing city and we're going to have growing pains, but it's all worth it. Look at this great city.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, you know, when there's no traffic, you can get across the city in like 20, 25 minutes.
Yes.
And then when there's traffic and there's construction, 40 minutes, an hour. So
I know.
Yeah.
It's true, but it's nothing like LA.
Nah, definitely not. But that's the one thing that I'm like a little bit like, stay over there just because I'm like, I don't want to deal with that traffic.
Right. But all that construction they're doing on the freeways right now that are, it's hard to traverse and you get upset. But that's widening it and making it better for the future.
Absolutely.
So I try to look at it that way.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, the biggest complaint of most people is orange cones.
Yeah,
but I tell them my story.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite places to hang out in Las Vegas?
You know, I have, during this campaign, I've been everywhere.
Yeah.
I've absolutely, I love meeting people. Like I just met you. I mean, there's so many people, wonderful people in the city who have a story, who absolutely were born and raised here, which is, it used to be where it was so hard to find somebody who was born and raised here. Now I'm meeting more and more people that were born and raised here. So I think it's just meeting all the people that I've met. I think every time we meet people and we are able to learn their story, we learn so much more. And that's been my favorite part of this whole campaign. But what I like to do is I have five dogs, so I spend time with my dogs when I have time. I'm a big, I love Pilates, so I do a lot of Pilates. But right now, it's been for almost 2 years just on the campaign trail, meeting so many incredible people.
Is there any parts of Las Vegas that you hadn't visited before that you have since campaigning?
I was just at Lighthouse Charities today. It's kind of in the north, almost to North Las Vegas. They have a farm. They have these type of places. I had no idea in the middle of the city, they have a little charity with training and training refugees. And then they have a farm 7 minutes away that they took me to right before I came here. And it's in the middle of a residential. And it's like, these are the places to me that are very exciting to find out about, because they're like little secret places in the middle of our city that are doing so much good for the community. So yeah, I've been to a ton of places, that so many I can't even mention them all since I've been on this campaign trail. I think I've really gotten to know not just the city but the county as well, all of Southern Nevada.
Yeah, that's
amazing. And if it wasn't for running for mayor, I probably wouldn't have discovered as all these incredible places.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely would. I mean, I assume it takes you to all across the city, meeting all types of people.
Everywhere.
So, yeah, that's awesome. Are you a people person?
I am.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that to me, I feel the same way.
Animal and people person.
Animal and people person, yeah. But yeah, I'm the same way. Like, I love talking to people, just hearing their stories, and especially Vegas stories. Those are the ones that they're the best.
Well, I love this podcast because you really ask the important questions, I think.
Thank you. Thank you. We see what's happening in LA. Besides their policies and running businesses out, the homeless problem has also become very, very big, especially in the last few years. It's not as bad in Vegas, but it's sort of getting there. People are sort of starting to see it happen. So what kinds of things can we do to sort of alleviate that problem? I know some people that we were asking were talking about how it's very hard. It's easier to find women's shelters, which is a good thing, but there's not as many things for men, especially men with children. So is there anything that you would be able to do for that?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because part of the problem that Los Angeles has is because of the policies. They put a band-aid on the situation and they don't really find solutions. And that's why you saw what happened in LA, San Francisco, and a lot of other cities across the nation, is because they're not trying to solve the problem. They're putting a band-aid on it.
Right.
I remember going back to LA about a year ago, and there was a whole homeless community under the freeway, you know, where you would get off the freeway and make a left under the bridge, and they would put a porta potty there. That was their solution. Like, that's just encouraging more homelessness. And so I have to say, I got elected to the city council in 2019. In 2017, city officials from the city of Las Vegas went around the country to find out what was really working. And we built our first shelter, which is called the Corridor of Hope, which you probably know about. And that Corridor of Hope was a start to bring in wraparound services. I got elected in 2019 and toured it and was a little bit appalled about how it was set up. And during the 2 years, during the 5 years I've been on the council, we have put a lot of resources into it, and I toured it recently, and I'm very impressed by it. We have brought in medical and health and wellness, a mental and physical health there. We've brought in a lot and done a lot there. I have to say, it's not enough for all of Southern Nevada. We were the only entity, the city of Las Vegas, that actually built a shelter with wraparound services. The homelessness doesn't know boundaries. So it's not like, okay, you can only come in if you're city of Los Angeles. We were taking in everyone. So what I'm really excited about is that we did the camping ban, and people were not excited about the camping ban. They thought we were punishing the unhoused. That was not the case. The case is our businesses in downtown were going to close because they had unhoused people sleeping outside their businesses, and nobody wanted to go into those businesses. Kind of what you heard about in LA and San Francisco.
Absolutely.
Where they would go into the Starbucks and drink out of the creamers and, you know, kind of took over. So what we did was we did what's called the camping ban. You can't camp out on a public right of way. But there were two reasons to do that. One was to save the businesses, and the other one was to get people into services. I mean, whatever your stats are, I've been out in the tunnels, I've been out on the street, and what I can say is 90% of what is happening out there is people are either addicted to drugs or they have mental health issues. We need to provide those services. I remember way back 20, 30 years ago where you couldn't go into a rehab unless you came from a wealthy family. Thank God now we are have those services where people can get them for free, and we need to have them. We need to be able to help people that want to go into recovery. I have a big heart for recovery. I think it's important that we provide those services. People get addicted. If they're willing and want to get help, we need to give it to them. So the thing I'm grateful about is when we go out and we tell people you can't camp on the right of way, would you like some services? So we can try to get them into mental health services or recovery. I think it's so, so important. It's I think it's a community. We need to come together and make sure we provide those services. So that is the reason we did that no camping ban. And I think that that's a part of the solution. Now, here's the other solution. I don't know if you know Governor Lombardo.
Yeah.
Governor Sandoval. Governor Lombardo has sent his team down to the Haven for Hope, which is what we replicated on 2 acres. And he is doing a Hope Campus, Campus for Hope, which will replicate that on maybe 14 acres, which is what we need. We need a bigger facility to bring people, to give them the wraparound services, transitional housing, mental health help. So it's in the process. They're going to open their doors in 2026. So I'm really excited about that, because I got to tell you, the city was doing it sort of on their own,
right,
for quite a while. And it just wasn't enough resources to do this. So I'm pretty excited about what's coming.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially given the fact that along with drug addiction, I feel like gambling addiction is also a very big problem. And because we have, our city is really, you know, big in gambling, all the illicit activities that kind of happen around those types of environments, it attracts people from other places. And, you know, when they have nothing left, unfortunately, they're left on the street.
You're
with
right.
No place to live. And yeah, we absolutely do need to help them. And I remember when I was a freshman at UNLV, we actually had an assignment in an English class, and it was about like the homeless problem. And I remember being the only person that said sort of like, I understand, right? These people are humans. We have to support them. We have to treat them fairly, give them rights, take care of them. But one thing that really isn't spoken about is when you care for somebody, you sort of have to hold them accountable as well.
Exactly.
And those are the types of things that if you don't do that, you're actually just enabling them to stay there forever, which is what we don't want. We want to give these people help, give them the resources to be able to improve their lives, to join society, to maybe build the connections back with their families and friends. And so they can feel that they have a support system and they don't have to resort to things to make them feel better. They can count on us and, you know, we have each other's backs.
Exactly. And you do have to hold them accountable. And that's why the twofold with the camping ban.
Yeah.
Because it's very important that you don't encroach upon somebody else's rights. But we offer the help. and the help is there, and not everybody takes it.
No.
And sometimes with our more teams or those from different organizations who are out in the street, shine a light, et cetera, it sometimes takes 10 times to speak to these people before they'll ever take help. And some never do, but at least we're offering it. And I think that's what's important.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hopefully we're able to give them help. And yeah, it must be, I mean, it's difficult because you also, if you're in their shoes, like you don't really understand what it's about. You maybe are nervous or scared, but ultimately I feel like it's a good solution.
And yes. And the important thing is that we have those resources for those who have the challenge of mental health issues. I mean, we have to put those resources there. We have been, and we will continue, because that is important, because sometimes people don't even know what they're struggling with. And a lot of times these people with mental health issues, you know, they're off their medication. And so we have to be able to be there for them to get them back on track.
Yeah, that's been a very big thing that sort of has been more explored in the recent years, is the mental health epidemic we see. Like, I don't know if it's just something that's more occurring now, or it's something that we're paying more attention to. What would you say it is?
I say we're paying more attention to it, and I'd say that before there was so much stigma around all of this that we just sort of ignored it and wanted to, you know, kind of put them in a closet. Like, we wouldn't talk about a relative that was suffering with addiction or mental health, or we didn't understand it. There's a part of our society, and I say that even for myself, that we didn't understand what a mental health issue was. And so now with the education, with getting rid of the stigma, I think we're doing what we need to be doing as a society so we can offer help to those people.
Absolutely. Given that Las Vegas is a very big city, this is a very, very turbulent election cycle, to put it lightly, presidential election cycle. Probably the craziest that I've seen since I've been alive. And obviously we see where cities lie on the national scales. You know, certain cities are always Democrats, certain cities are always Republican. The thing that I like about Las Vegas is sort of we just march at the beat of our own drum. We
That's
don't
right.
really fold to anybody, and you really have to come here and tell us what you're going to do for us. Otherwise, we're not just going to vote
right.
blindly, which is something that I commend our city for. But where would you place Las Vegas on the national scale? Like, what can you do to ensure that things remain that way?
Oh, absolutely. Just making sure that we're doing what's right for our residents and reaching out to our residents. And I think one of the goals that I think in the back of my mind, there's a lot of areas that have been left behind. I think they've been left behind. They need more resources or help than other areas. And one of the things I want to do is go out into those communities and do a town hall and see what they want for their communities. Because a lot of times politicians have their own agenda. I don't think that's the way we should really move forward. I think what's important is to find out what's important to the constituents. What do you see your neighborhood, you know, historic West Side, for example? Where do you see your neighborhood going? What would you like to see done in your neighborhood? And I think I sort of think more as in that business sense that, And also with the compassion of the people, you know, you can't just go in and do your own agenda. You really need to see what the people envision their neighborhoods to be like.
Yeah, I agree. And that's one thing that, being a local, we almost feel like sometimes we're just overlooked because we're not, you know, the gaming industry, or we're not a big player in and of ourselves. You know, we kind of do our own thing, we go to work, we feed our families, we live our life, but it feels like a lot of times we're overlooked and the things that really matter to us are sort of not taken into account.
That's why I say left behind.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think that that's important. If we're not looking at the city holistically and organically as a whole, then what are we doing?
Right.
We can make this area look nice, but what about the rest of our city?
Exactly.
It's Las Vegas. It's a city. It, you know, so I really try to look at it like that. And it's important for me to know what's important to the community and bring it all up.
Yeah, exactly. Because like, even when you're on the strip, it's all like lights and glamour. But then you go like one street over and it's like,
It's not forgotten. Like that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And that's what's so nice about the city limits, because we're not part of the strip. That's the county.
Yep.
So I get to look at the whole city, and I get to, you know, really go out and talk to people and say, what do you envision this to be? I'm so excited. I'm really look forward, if people elect me as their mayor, to moving forward and making sure that Las Vegas, like you said, stays a small town in a big city, but we look at the whole city and make sure that everybody's prospering and moving forward.
Absolutely. To close off, we did have a few questions from our listeners. So do you mind if we go ahead and walk through those real quick?
I would love to.
So somebody asked, I would like to ask about any planned initiatives for youth training and employment within the city. We should be setting kids up to be more than dealers and bartenders.
Well, it's funny that question was asked, because we do have a youth program of workforce. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's online. Somebody can go online and look at it. And that's a very good question, though. I'm going to go and explore more and see what programs that we are training in and make sure that it's much more than bartending and entertainment.
Okay, yeah. This one's another one sort of about the traffic cones again. They ask, why are there so many cones all over the road all year without any related construction for about 85% of them? This is a result of the city budgeting. Is this a result of the city budgeting on some level? What service are the majority of these cones providing that my tax dollars are being used for? It sincerely seems like it is intentional, artificial traffic. As a current city councilwoman, I'm sure she has insights. So
what people have to realize is that anything below Sahara, so if you see it on the 15, is county. Mm-hmm. Or it could be, transportation. So in the city limits, we do constantly work with our city manager, explaining that people are not happy with the cones and making sure that we're being productive about where we're placing them and making sure that work is being done. But I think it's important, again, to say we're a growing city. There's going to be growing pains. And you know how I feel about cones.
Absolutely. Yeah. They said Vegas is more than just tourism. The Strip and Fremont at its heart are locals. Many of our locals are elderly and have fixed income. Many are drawn to Las Vegas for the formerly cheap cost of living and the weather, which is better for arthritis. However, we lack the healthcare infrastructure. For example, there's no major transplant center, so people have to go to California if they need an organ other than a kidney. And we have a dearth of specialists and home healthcare workers. That being said, what are your action plans for recruiting and retaining specialists that our elderly population needs, i.e. cardiothoracic or cardiopulmonary specialists?
So we're working with the legislature right now. One of the bills that we've proposed as a city is to work on our Medicaid reimbursements. And it's so important, because we're one of the lowest in the state, which is why I think we're not seeing us grow in the medical field as we want to. One of the other goals that I have for your listener is we're going to build up the medical district, which is in the city of Las Vegas. And I will do everything I can to make sure that we are continue to work with our legislature to making sure that those reimbursements will attract good doctors here. We're expanding our medical school, so that's a good thing. And, you know, we're encouraging the legislature to give incentives to keep those students here after they graduate.
Yeah, that's a very big one. Having a medical school here was very big, and it just opened like a few years ago.
Well, I voted on that in the 2015 legislative session. So
yeah.
We did a lot of good legislation in that session, and I'm very proud of that. So
absolutely.
I'm so grateful that we have that school.
Absolutely.
Now we just need to retain the students.
Exactly. Okay, another one that says, what are at least two things that you can confidently and realistically accomplish in your first 100 days as a mayor?
Well, I'm hoping to streamline business immediately. I would like to continue working on a children's hospital here in Southern Nevada. We don't have a standalone, and that's, I don't think I will finish it in 100 days, but I'll definitely get it moving. And the other thing is I'd like to get those town halls set up and see how we can improve the districts in the city of Las Vegas that really need some improvement and resources.
What districts in particular would you probably
I would say they would be in Ward 3 and Ward 5.
Okay.
Those are really important for me.
This is again talking about like the housing and homeless. So are there any plans to build more housing facilities, mental care facilities, and drug rehabilitation centers for the current homeless population so we can get them off the streets and give them the dignity they deserve?
Yeah, so that would be the one that I spoke about, that Governor Lombardo is doing the Campus for Hope, or it's Hope for Campus or Campus for Hope, one or the other. And I've been involved with that. I did fly down to San Antonio with his delegation because I was really curious to see what we replicated. And I think it's going to be an amazing facility. We'll work really closely with him. And I believe there's a possibility in the city of Las Vegas. So, yes, there's a lot of hope for that because it's coming and it's on track and it should open its doors in 2026, which will relieve a lot of what we're doing because, like I said, the problem is, you know, North Las Vegas, the county, city of Las Vegas, and yet the city is the one that's taking it all in the shelter. So we'll continue ours and growing. And we also have a recuperative care center. I don't know if your listener knows that, but we created that after COVID. And I'll tell you what that does. When these folks that are unhoused end up in the hospital, and you know how it is, you go to the hospital, you basically have a surgery, you're out the next day.
Yeah.
Well, these people, how are they going to take care of themselves when they're living on the street? Mm-hmm. They're not. So we have a recuperative care center that we will take them and take care of them until they're completely healed. And that's something that I think has been amazing because there's nothing like it, and the city is completely supporting that. And so we're going to continue to work with the state, make sure we get resources, make sure they have resources, and make sure that we're all working together. Like I said, you know, we are the city of Las Vegas, but Las Vegas is a huge area when you encompass all of Southern Nevada. So we all need to work together.
Okay, so we have a lot of listeners from Lone Mountain. Now, some of these are inquisitive, some of these are a little nasty, but I wanted to keep it as civil as possible and sort of have you on here so you can clear the air.
Okay.
A lot of people are asking about the Mormon church that's getting built mm-hmm. by Lone Mountain. Obviously, we know that that's not your district,
nope.
But can you offer any clarification sort of on what that situation is?
Yeah, so it was something that was passed recently, and I voted to pass it. I feel very comfortable with my vote. You know, churches are a good thing in our neighborhoods, and I think they had the right to build. We're dealing with Badlands because I wasn't on the council when they denied the builder,
mm-hmm.
but I think it's important to look at land use and to make the right decision. And I did a lot of research and made sure that I was, whenever I do a vote, whether it's on a land use or any other ordinance, I really look at the unintended consequences. And I know there's a lot of people that live up in that area that really didn't want it, but that's not a reason not to support it and vote for it. I mean, we have a fiduciary duty to do our homework and make sure that we're voting for proper land use. And what was put in front of me, and again, it was not my ward, it was not my district, and it was a unanimous vote. So I stand by my vote in voting for it.
When you have like difficult decisions like that, what sort of research do you have to do?
Legal. You have to do legal research. What are the and then what are the consequences? I've met with both sides of the issue. And then you have to look at what the legal ramifications are, because we're in a situation in the city with what's called Badlands. And it was denying, before my time, denying the use of a developer to develop. And he sued and he won. So it's not that anybody can come in and get what they want, but if it's harmonious and compatible and there are certain land use laws, then, you know, you can't just not vote for something because the neighbors don't want it. That's why we're in Badlands. Neighbors didn't want it, but the guy had a right and they had signed away their rights in the CC&Rs. So I stand by my vote. I did my research,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sorry that there's a group of people that don't want it in their neighborhood, and I respect that, and I think they have a right. They had a right to come and protest it, but the decision was made.
So when you meet with both sides on issues like that, obviously the construction is one side, but who represents the other side? Would it just be like local organizations?
Well, I don't know that it was a construction that represented them.
Or like the developers.
Yeah, they were people who bought the land and wanted to build what they wanted to build on it. And so the other side had representation of a lobbyist just the same as the other side. They both had lobbyists. And that is now become a legal issue because they're have filed a lawsuit and, you know, they have a right to do that. So, you know, I pretty much believe people have the right to do what they feel is necessary. But, you know, on that vote, it passed and they're going to start building.
There was one more. I'm trying to find it.
Good questions.
Thank you. Thank
Good
you.
Audience.
Yeah, thank you.
You have a well-informed audience, and I appreciate their questions.
Thank you. To summarize it, people were just wondering sort of why the Badlands case is still getting fought for, because it's costing taxpayers money. And yeah, that situation. Like, can you explain a little bit about what sort of happened with that and, like, why it's an issue and how we can get it resolved?
So Badlands started before I got elected about 9 years ago. I believe elections have consequences, and this is a huge reason to make sure that people know who they're voting for. I believe it was political, personally, and I believe that that we should never have been in the Badlands situation. And I also believe that if we had strong leadership on the chair of our council, we would not be in this situation, because it was a situation where a developer had the right to develop on the land that he bought. And the council at the time, for whatever reason, kept denying his applications. And again, I'm going to say it was somebody in the HOAs. It's something that would take a whole hour to talk about, and maybe we'll do the whole thing on another podcast.
I'd love to, yeah.
But the bottom line is the guy should have been able to build. It was fought by the homeowners and by people that stirred it up, some wealthy people in the Queens Ridge, and it ended up where our council members at the time denied him. It ended up in court. I had a settlement a couple of years ago, because my goal when I got elected 5 years ago, I remember being interviewed by Victor Jakes when I was running for the special election in that ward. And he asked me, you know, what are you going to do about Badlands? And I said, if we don't settle Badlands, this is before any judgments. It was in the courts, but it had not been adjudicated. Mm-hmm. And I said, if we do not settle Badlands, we're going to be writing a big check. And so my goal when I got elected was to bring the council and the mayor, even though I wasn't the mayor, together and get a settlement. And I try to explain to people, four of the people on the council, and you need four votes, were on the council or in planning commission when we got into Badlands. So it was hard to tell people, you made a mistake. And they weren't willing to settle. But I did have a settlement a couple of years ago that some of the staff got into an argument over the developer, and it failed. And that settlement that I had ready to go, we did not have the votes on it, but I wanted to have the council members be accountable if they didn't vote on it, and would have been the price that we paid out for one of the five lawsuits. Mm. So it would have been a great thing for the city. I've been the only one to vote against appeals. I've been the only one to vote against more money for outside attorneys, because outside attorneys have no incentive to settle this. They're getting money. We have 14 or 16 civil attorneys. Why are we paying outside counsel? So I've kind of been on an island by myself, but there was an article that just came out in the Review Journal in an editorial this morning that said that the council and the mayor should start listening to Councilwoman Seaman and get this settled. So I have to say, elections have consequences, and bad legislation has consequences. And as mayor, this is going to be settled. immediately.
Awesome. Thank you for that. My last question, obviously this podcast will sort of, I try to touch on the topics that I feel like people in the city, especially our listeners, are more curious about. This one's sort of just for me personally. I have aspirations to be mayor one day. It's my dream. I've said it for a long time. I love this city. I don't plan on moving anywhere. I own a business here. My whole life has been here. I have family here, friends here. Most of the best memories of my life have happened in this city. So if you could share any advice for me, what would it be?
Well, I think that's great. I would advise you to first run for city council, get to know what the job is and how to serve people. And you can come and shadow me when I'm mayor, and I would love to teach you everything. And, I'm so grateful that you have that goal, because it's important for people to share those goals and learn about what you can do to attain your dream. And I'm just excited about that.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to tell the people before we end the podcast?
Well, I hope that they'll go out and vote. It's important for everyone to go out and vote. And as your mayor, I promise you, public safety is number one, because right now we do have tourists coming every day. Every law enforcement agency in this state has endorsed me. So I just would be honored to be your mayor, and I'm asking for your vote. And I appreciate, if you have any questions, just go to my website, victoriaseaman.com. Thank you.
Is there anywhere else they can get in touch with you on social media or talk
Absolutely.
To your campaign team?
Instagram, Victoria D. Seaman, Facebook, Councilwoman Seaman. We have TikTok, Victoria Seaman, LinkedIn, all of the above. Victoria Seaman or Victoria D. Seaman or Councilwoman Victoria Seaman.
Councilwoman, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate you so much.
Likewise. Thank you guys for listening. Go ahead and follow the show on Instagram at ontherun.pod. Listen to it on Spotify, YouTube. It's going to be available on all platforms. Go ahead and share it. Make sure you go out and vote. Thank you guys. We'll see you guys next week for another episode. Peace.